5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Salutations across the nation. Welcome. This is episode 8 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett, your master of ceremonies for this joyous audio occasion. I'm also the mouthpiece urging you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. I know I sound like a broken record, but I've got to do the business part up front. So make sure you help me out. A quick review goes a long, long way, and it takes you literally 15 seconds to do so. A lot to do today on this episode. Someone who I consider a mentor as well as a longtime friend, Bruce Gilbert, Cumulus's senior vice president of sports, will be on the show. The interesting thing when you're interviewing somebody who once hired you and who you look up to in the business is that there are certain conversations you can explore that others probably can't. With that said, it's also at times a little uncomfortable because the one thing I try to do with every guest I talk to is be candid, straightforward, and really challenge them to give me something of value to present to you, the listener. So I'm looking forward to the conversation and the various topics I'm sure we'll cover as we explore the world of sports radio together. That, though, is still a couple of minutes away, which means I've still got time to mentally prepare for it. So until then, let's kick things off with this week's starting point.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Action! Wrestling fans are lonely, pathetic booger eaters. Colin Cowherd said that in 2012 and reiterated it again this week following WrestleMania, an event which captured a ton of interest across the globe. Now, I myself am proud to admit I enjoy sports entertainment. While I don't necessarily agree with Colin's assessment, I also don't take it personally. People are entitled to their unique opinions and tastes, and clearly, Colin doesn't care about the WWE. I'll sleep fine tonight knowing that he and I don't share a mutual interest as it pertains to pro wrestling. When I first started programming in St. Louis, I endured a lot of criticism and discovered quickly you've got to possess thick skin to maneuver many of the challenges that this business throws at you. Inside each company or building, you're going to have people who will run through a wall for you and others who are sharpening a blade and waiting for the right moment to stick it in your spine. As easy as it would be to eliminate the waste in your workplace and replace it with people who share similar values and who you're more comfortable with, sometimes it's not that easy, especially if someone is performing and is an integral part of your company's success. Take, for example, Bill O'Reilly at Fox News. Now, I have no idea if Bill sexually harassed females or if he and his bosses are terrible individuals with a lack of human decency. But I know that often where there's smoke, there's fire. And when your name is frequently attached to million-dollar lawsuits over repeated complaints of sexual harassment, you're not likely to be 100% innocent of all charges. That said, Fox News relies heavily on O'Reilly, and without him, they take a massive hit. They could possibly fall from the top spot into the second or third position, especially when you consider that they lost Megyn Kelly just a few months ago. So while the criticism and negative press may frustrate Fox News' top decision makers, it's something they have to delicately maneuver. And I raise those examples because criticism is part of our industry. Every management decision, on-air opinion, guest booked, production piece, or caller placed through to the talk show has a 50-50 shot of being right or wrong. We make a living talking candidly about players, coaches, organizations, and league officials, second-guessing everything they do, and in some cases, even aggressively taking exception with who they are and how they conduct themselves. Yet when the light gets redirected and shined in our own eyes, we get very uncomfortable and insecure. Last week, if you visited sportsradiopd.com, you might have read the piece I published on the state of ESPN. Over 1,300 people participated in a survey, and the results weren't very flattering for the network. Now, I've said this before, and I want to repeat it here. I'm not one of these media pundits out for blood seeking ESPN's demise. In fact, it's quite the contrary. I root for people there. I maintain friendships there. I believe as a whole, they still do an outstanding job. Like any company, they've got their strengths and their weaknesses, but they're in much better shape than many others. So I was very surprised by how sensitive some Bristolites were to the piece I published. Listen, I've done research plenty of times. This isn't my first rodeo. Feedback is always subjective, and you can treat it one of two ways. You either put value in it, or you ignore it and move on. But when your company's perception is called into question repeatedly, and you're experiencing declining ratings and revenues and rapid subscriber loss, it may help to listen to what your audience is telling you. As I learned when CEO Bob Iger addressed stockholders last month, and as I was reminded of last week on social media by Scott Van Pelt and through email by a few other ESPN personalities and executives who shall remain nameless, criticism is not something the mothership handles well. Iger told a room that ESPN doesn't lean left and has no political bias. Yet the majority of survey participants felt that wasn't true. The Big Lead survey of sports media members showed that 49 of 51 people voted against Donald Trump. To suggest there is no political bias is insulting. The one that disappointed me the most, though, was Scott Van Pelt, because rather than ignoring the piece or simply disagreeing with it, he chose to go a different route and lay blame on the survey and question my credibility. Now, with all due respect to Scott, I've been in this industry for 2 decades. I've built a business on my own the past 2 years. I don't have ESPN funding my work, and I don't need Scott Van Pelt's opinion to validate my accomplishments. I've also worked inside the same exact studio with Scott on shows he's worked. If I didn't have the skill to do this line of work, I'd have never been trusted to be in that situation. When you're in a high-profile position in sports radio, arrows and bullets are going to fly in your direction. I've got thick skin, I can handle the heat. I may not always agree, and I may speak my mind and defend my position, but I've got no problem with someone expressing a different point of view and not supporting my work. If it's not your cup of tea, don't drink it. But what I'd remind Scott and those inside Bristol headquarters who are sensitive to critical feedback is to open their eyes and take a look around. Why are jobs being eliminated? Why are subscribers down? Why are ratings and revenues down? That's not a Jason Barrett survey that created that problem. That's an ESPN issue. Failure to satisfy the audience, negotiate good deals, adjust to changing times, and present analysis and opinion from one side of the fence have all contributed to ESPN's challenges. A piece of advice for my four-letter friends, and they can take it for whatever it's worth. When over 1,300 people tell you what they don't like about your product, use your eyes and ears to absorb the information. It's how you get better. Nobody said it was 100% perfect, but there's some truth inside those answers. It's not going to be the last time people find fault in something ESPN does, but hopefully the next time they express themselves, they've reduced the negativity by a few percentage points. If ESPN folks want to dismiss the opinions of their readers, listeners, and viewers, and ignore the signs that demonstrate that fans are less connected now more than ever to the network, that's their prerogative. But rather than taking aim at those consuming your programming, here's a different thought. Maybe use your energy to look in the mirror and inside your own building to figure out how to give people a better experience. When you do that, it's amazing how positive the results turn out. Let me know what you think. You can reach me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. It's now time to shift our focus towards this week's conversation, and it takes place with the Senior Vice President of Sports for Cumulus. That would be Bruce Gilbert. Bruce and I have known each other for roughly 14 years now in the business, and he's one of my favorite people in the industry. I really respect the job he does, and there's a reason why he's been successful everywhere he's been. During the course of our conversation, we were able to get into a number of different topics, including the role of corporate with local stations, the state of the sports radio network business, the future of Mike and Mike, the CBS Entercom merger. I could go on all day, but why do that? Here's the interview.
And now, our feature presentation.
I want you to help me explain something that a bunch of people in our industry really don't understand, and that's the network sports radio space and the way success is measured. Ratings, revenue, clearance, all these factors. What's the number one thing you're looking for in determining if you're on the right track?
It definitely is a different dynamic. Do we look at ratings? Absolutely. Do ratings determine who we keep on the network and who we don't keep on the network? Not necessarily, because there is a deep need to fulfill the needs of all of the affiliate radio stations. And for a lot of them, it becomes the off hours, right? It's not the morning drive or afternoon drive. It's the evenings and the weekends. And it's being able to supply them not only with a reliable product that they can be proud of, that they can not have to worry about embarrassing them or causing them any problems with the FCC, but more importantly, with the way sports is developing and happening in real time, it gives them just that, real-time coverage of any breaking news that seems to happen anymore late at night, on the weekends. The network really is a huge safety net for radio stations that typically can't be staffed as much as they used to be staffed in the past for all the reasons we're well aware of. So the number one thing is you know, being able to get the distribution. It's funny, at the local level, your distribution is your transmitter and your tower. At the network level, your distribution's only as good as the radio stations that carry the programs. So it's clearance first and foremost that you look at. And then once you have the clearance, are you able to generate some actual ratings on those radio stations that clear it? And of course, you know, with the ratings, just like any other radio station, comes the revenue. Sometimes the revenue can come without ratings, because at the network level, you do have the ability to potentially package, you know, network shows with other things the network does, primarily play-by-play. So that dynamic is a little bit different as well.
How important is the relevance factor? And I bring that up because a lot of these networks these days, like ESPN, like Fox, like CBS, NBC, they all have a TV component. And let's face it, the radio product is able to promote things going on the TV side, which is beneficial to the TV audience. At the same time, let's say you're good in New York, but you're getting killed in Dallas, Chicago, and LA. It's really hard to justify whether or not the ratings are there or not. So how important is that relevance to having the promotional outlet to further your content and inform people about the things you're doing on the TV and digital side of business?
I think it's really important. I mean, it's, yeah, obviously it's being done at the highest level for a reason, because, you know, it's a noisy, crowded world we live in, and anything you can do to rise above the noise to make yourself more noticeable is going to give you a competitive advantage, in my opinion. So does it have to be there? No, but I think it, and it's not just about being, you know, a marketing tool for everything you're doing audio and digital wise. It's also about raising awareness and just raising the profile of the personalities that you have on the radio show, because even though radio is far more intimate, and I sincerely believe creates more passionate fans, because the fans of audio really believe they know the hosts, what television does is it puts a face with it, right? And people do like to have a face with a voice and like to be able to have a picture of what they're listening to. And you know, in the old days, the only way they could have that is they'd paint their picture in the mind, and there was nothing wrong with that. But now when we give them that picture through the television transmission, I think it elevates the profile and awareness of those personalities. So it's all of those factors combined that I think makes the television aspect of it really important. But as you know, the very best and most talented people can cut through whether they have that television component or not.
Many industry people, Bruce, don't understand the role corporate executives play in helping local brands. In your case, you work with a number of great stations around the country, including KNBR in San Francisco, The Ticket in Dallas, and The Zone in Nashville, just to name a few. How would you describe what a day in the life of Bruce Gilbert is like as it pertains to your role as the Senior Vice President of Cumulus Sports?
Well, with Cumulus, I think the best way to describe my role for those stations you just mentioned and all the other ones that are branded as sports radio stations, you know, my job is basically to be an in-house consultant. I mean, I am the format captain, if you will, for sports. And whenever they have a situation where they feel like they could use some of the corporate tools that we provide, whether it be myself or others at the corporate level, they know to tag us in. I think that one of the great things about Cumulus and the way we're operating today is that the program directors at the local level have a lot of resources, and I'm just one of those resources. And when it comes time to look at a specific adjustment to a radio station or a change in the radio station or, you know, a new talent or a sports rights deal for play-by-play, if the radio station market manager and program director want the assistance, I'm here to assist them. And if not, they can make those decisions at the local level. Now, often in doing that role, I am able to your point earlier, suggest to them, you know what, it might make more sense from a business perspective or from a ratings perspective or from an operational perspective to take this piece of programming off the Westwood One shelf and insert it into your lineup, because then you're helping yourself by maybe, you know, mitigating some costs at the local level, and you're helping the company by providing Westwood won some clearance in a Cumulus market. But we only do that when it makes sense to the local program director and the local market manager. They have the decisions. They know their market better than anybody, and they have the autonomy to make those decisions. We just ask that they work with us to make those decisions in a way in which we believe is the most productive.
Speaking of big local decisions, I'm sure you were part of the brain trust that made the call to eliminate sports updates on KMBR in San Francisco, which was a big, big piece of business out there. I mean, this was a brand that has a history of being consistent, doesn't change a ton. I mean, obviously, I know I spent a few years in the market. At this point in time, in 2017, and I understand it was done at the local level, but I'm sure they had to talk to you about it at some point. Why do you feel it's best for the station's future to go that direction at this time?
I think it's really interesting the way you frame that, because I think in the grand scheme of things, it's not nearly as big a change as it looks like from the outside, because it does, to your point, when you think of KMBR historically, the thought of them no longer having updates sounds seismic, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. This, a big part of making that decision was the belief in your on-air talent, right? I mean, it's not a mark against people that do updates. It's not an attempt to run people that do updates out of the business. But as sports continues to be more and more real time, and as things continue to break, you know, rapidly, and people can find out so quickly on their smartphone what's going on with their favorite teams, we just felt like between, you know, Murph and Mac and Gary and Larry and Fitz and Brooks and, you know, Tolbert and Lund, we got the very best, most qualified sports talent in the market that can talk about what's going on. We don't have to do a formal update. And if you think about it, a formal update is kind of it's antiquated in the sense that it's structured. It really sort of breaks up programming and affects the flow. And it's many times providing information that's dated. And that couldn't be even more true when you factor in smartphones and the ability to program your phone to send you, you know, you don't have to go look for it anymore. We're so lazy. You just program your phone to send you, alerts when something happens with your favorite team or your favorite player. Yes, it was an important decision. Yes, there was a lot of conversation about it. Yes, the local market had to, you know, be the ones to pull the trigger. But the reality is, if your talk show hosts are preparing properly and doing their show well, then they really are doing real-time updates every time they're on the air. So why not have them on the air as much as possible and not have the potentially perceived break in programming to do what could also be perceived as old information.
But you know our business. The second anything changes, everybody acts like, oh my God, the sky is falling. I mean, you look at what's gone on in the industry. I mean, you at one point with Red Zebra in D.C. didn't have updates in middays. You had Mike and Mike doing their own updates in morning. It's not uncommon. To me, it was a great move. But, you know, I wrote about that topic because I think one thing that I've discovered, and I'm sure you see it too, is that sports radio as a whole, and I could say even probably the radio business in general, doesn't do necessarily a great job engaging with fans on social devices. You go to Twitter and Facebook, a lot of times there are a lot of comments coming in, but not a lot coming back. And so sometimes when you take the resources that you have inside of a building and redirect them to areas where maybe you're a little thinner, but yet see that there's a ton of value, that's part of evolution in an industry. I mean, from your standpoint, does that factor into the decision process when you guys are going through that on one of the stations?
Without a doubt, and especially particular to San Francisco being located, you know, near the Silicon Valley. Our digital department in San Francisco at that cluster is the largest digital department we have within the Cumulus family, and for all the right reasons, because it's, you know, much more accepted from advertisers' perspective. And to your point, you know, we all have been learning. We've all been looking for the right formula. We've been experimenting a lot with our web pages and with our Twitter feeds and with our Facebook posts and trying to find out how to most effectively touch our consumer and interact with them and make it more of a relationship. And in many ways, we failed at that. But every time we fail, I think we get smarter and we get better and we learn how to do it more effectively. And to your point, if you can take some of the resources, in this case, the financial resources that are going toward producing updates, and spend some of that money back around to your digital team or even to the same person and have that person be more focused on doing, you know, social outreach and social response and social posting, I think you have an opportunity to be more embedded with your audience and with your, you know, core group of fans than by continuing to do it the same old way. And as you know, I'm not the brightest bulb in the socket by any stretch, but one thing that I've been taught by the great people I've worked with over the years and I've tried to push with anybody that will listen is if we sit still, we're getting passed by. And I think in a lot of ways, the update conversation is a great conversation about just being stuck in our ways and doing it the same way forever and ever. And there are new and different ways to disseminate that information and in a way that's more in line with how people consume that information today.
Well, speaking of change, you've gone through some yourself during your career. When I talk to people about you, they usually list ESPN Radio as being the one stop on your resume that put you on the map, even though you had already enjoyed success at The Ticket in Dallas before that. While you were in Bristol, you brought in Cowherd and Gottlieb, added diverse voices on the network, which it had been missing previously, elevated Mike and Mike. When you look at the network now from afar, as someone who's competing against his former home, how would you assess ESPN Radio's current offerings?
You know, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you I had opinions because, you know, all of us in this business do. I think I'm hesitant, however, to really go there because I don't really know what their strategy is. You know, when you're operating it day to day and you're interacting with the other departments inside that huge pantheon that is ESPN with this its major branding and all of its tentacles, you know, we had a real strong, and you were part of it, you were a huge part of it, we had a strategy, we knew what we were trying to accomplish, and our strategy was based very much on being really good at radio and not operating radio like television people would operate radio, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's not a shot at television people, it just that was the way we wanted to do it. And it's a long-winded way for me to say, you talked about it earlier, right? How important is TV to radio? Well, in the ESPN world, how important is TV to radio? How important is TV overall? How are they getting TV to really drive radio? So, look, I look at it like this. They're trying some different things. Some of it may not be as good as others. They're definitely doing a great job at providing diverse voices. Some of those people need a few more hours in the cockpit, in my opinion, but at least they're bringing new and unique people to radio. Will it pan out? Will it play out in the long run? I don't know. You mentioned two people, Colin and Doug. Both those guys seem to be doing pretty well. I think they both owe me a lot of money. I need to send them some invoices. But I'm sure
you have an opinion on Mike and Mike. You have to. I know how much that show meant to you. You elevated it. It became the focus. And now they're talking about breaking it up after 17 years. That's hard.
Yeah, it is really hard, and you hate to see it happen because I think they're an amazing team. I mean, you can say what you want about that show, and every show has its level of subjectivity, but it really is a classic example of, you know, two guys who just have amazing chemistry, even though, frankly, they're not that similar, right? And what really helped elevate that show, I think, is when they started highlighting the things about each other that aren't similar, you know, whether it be the metrosexual aspects of Greenberg, you know, the manly, bodacious appetite of Golic, you know, whatever it might be. Here's another thing that's great about those guys, and anybody that's ever worked with a team show can appreciate this. They have a profound respect for each other. And that's so critical in a team show. And both of them realized early on that they needed the other one. And I think when you find that, that's really hard to recreate, and it's impossible to manufacture. And I think that's one of the key things about the two of them being together. And, you know, when you think about network sports radio, Jim Rome, in my opinion, was the first guy to ever really cut through on the network space. He was kind of the Rush Limbaugh of sports, you know, the first guy to get any kind of scale in a lot of radio stations. But then you would have to say after that, Dan Patrick certainly deserves a lot of credit for cutting through. But Mike and Mike, not only did they cut through, they have become in many ways the sports radio show of record when you think about it, right?
Yep.
When the commissioner of the NFL wants to talk about rule changes, he's going to go on Mike and Mike. Same with the commissioner of Major League Baseball. And when there's huge breaking news, typically they can get the top newsmaker because of the resources inside ESPN, but also because, to their credit, they have become that show of record. And you really have to admire that. And the motivation for them breaking up, I have no idea what that is. I mean, I don't know if it's because Greenberg has really wanted to do some other things or if it's because the network really wants him to do other things. Whatever the case might be, I love both those guys. I think they're both amazingly talented. And I think the chapter in sports radio that should be devoted to them, or the many chapters that should be devoted to them, should be written very positively and create a legacy for years to come, because they really did become, in my opinion, the show of record. And even though it's breaking up, it would be hard to argue with the fact that they're not still to this day that show of record. So there's also something to be said for something going away when it's at its peak, right? Instead of letting it, you know, dwindle into something that nobody wants to ever listen to again before it goes away.
You never want to be the guy who has to be the one replacing that show. I just look back at when David Lee Roth replaced Howard Stern. Nobody wants to be the guy who follows the guy.
The guy that follows the guy that follows the guy.
Exactly. Let someone else fail first, and then you come to save the day.
That's right.
You know, one quality that I've always appreciated about you, it's doesn't exist in everybody in leadership spots, is that you invite a lot of people to reach out to you for opportunity, and you really do stay true to your word when you say, hey, I'll keep the resume on file, and if a fit opens down the road, I'll touch base. I mean, we've all heard that line so many times. And anytime people have, you know, talked to me about you, I say, hey, listen, he told me that, and 13 months later, out of the blue, I was reached out to for an opportunity at ESPN after I had pursued you for a syndicated wrestling show. So I obviously have personal history, and I know that you stand by your word, but why do you believe, from a program director standpoint, it's important to always be approachable and to really hold on to things? Because as you know, Bruce, you get hit with hundreds of resumes and applications every day, and not everyone does hold on to them.
Yeah, which is sad, right? Because my answer to the question is, isn't that the job? I mean, that really is my answer to the question. I mean, if you want to be a good leader in any business, you are responsible for the people who work for you. You're responsible for, you know, giving them direction, for allowing them to be who they are, and giving them the tools they need to succeed. But, you know, that's just every day. In the background of that, you have to be prepared for when one of those people decides to take another job, or one of those people, God forbid, gets sick and no longer can come to work anymore. I mean, those things are real and they happen. And shame on you if you aren't prepared for that. And you don't know where the next person from your team is going to come from. I mean, you may think you do. You may think you have a system, but my belief has always been, and really this is a, I think, more a sales mentality. I think the sales department does a much better job than the programming department at recruiting, because they have to. It's their lifeblood.
Yep.
They have to constantly be recruiting talent to be on their sales teams. And there's just a lot of turnover in that position for a myriad of reasons. I think in programming we get completely complacent. We think when we have our lineup set that we're set. And then suddenly you're surprised and you're like, oh, crap, I really need someone who can do this. And you don't have anything to draw from. So to me, the answer is simple. Number one, it's your job. Number two, if you're lucky enough, and I've been very lucky in my career to have a position of leadership, try to remember that you were that guy at one point looking for a job, looking for a break, looking for someone to give you a chance. And I'll never forget that. I came up through the smallest of markets. And yeah, I had the good fortune of working for my dad, who was in the radio business, who gave me a ton of opportunity. And I realize I'm extremely blessed in that regard. But I paid dues in small markets. I worked in small towns. I ate a lot of ramen noodles too. I remember that. And when people are looking, I think it's our job to genuinely help them, plus, when you look around at what's going on, you know, we're not a growth industry anymore. The radio business is a flat industry. Sometimes it's a minus one, minus two industry, much to our chagrin, which means it's not a real sexy business for a lot of people to get into. And when there are talented people who really want to do this, I really want them to be in it, because we're a business that's so fueled by passion that if someone is passionate about doing sports radio, I want to keep their information so that I can line them up with someone who needs somebody like them, because I will hire passion and good people over, you know, talented, arrogant assholes every day, because passion wins. It does. I've been doing this a long time. There's nothing that satisfies me more than seeing young people get in and grow and advance and become, you know, terrific at what they do.
There's certainly no shortage of passionate people in this business, and there's some stubbornness involved when it comes to decision making, because many are drawn to those they know and are comfortable with, and they become very territorial when questioned because they can't see beyond their emotional attachments. Yet an area of our business that's really struggling is the lack of diverse talent on sports radio. Rarely do we hear women-led shows, Hispanic teams, Black or Asian personalities, or people from other backgrounds. And I know, Bruce, you've gone through this situation before when you oversaw ESPN Radio. As a company, I think ESPN sometimes gets unfairly criticized for doing too much to promote diversity, when the reality is they're simply just trying to serve all sports fans across the country. But from your standpoint, how can we rectify what's been a big issue and a very unbalanced situation with diverse voices on the local level?
Hey, we just got to try harder. I mean, I hate to give you a really short answer to a really long question, because your question was filled with a lot of things that you know I believe in and agree with. And, you know, let's look at what kind of nationalities are playing on the fields that we talk about, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at the baseball fields and the football fields and the basketball courts, and you start to look at the diversity amongst those sports and the type of athletes that are, you know, those that are making the headlines and those that we're worshiping and cherishing or cursing and yelling at every day, we're not having a true representation of that, right? And there are certainly times in the natural flow of covering sports where, you know, we have a situation where we have an athlete from a particular background that, you know, two 50-something white guys are talking about, and frankly, they can't relate to that person in a million years. And that doesn't make them bad guys, but it does shine a light on our inability to be more effective in this arena. And I think our industry as a whole, it's not just a sports radio thing. I'll go back to, like you were saying before, our industry in general has a habit of just sort of recycling people, right, that worked across the street. And I think that empirically that is just amazingly lazy is what that is.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean that some of those people don't deserve to have opportunities. I'm not saying that. It just means that we need to dig deeper and try harder. And again, because this is not the sexiest industry anymore, and there are so many other opportunities for anybody with any kind of talent out there, we've got to be smarter about, you know, how we cast our net when looking for talent, and look at places that we haven't always looked, whether it be, you know, podcasts or just people who are influencers in the social media world who may not even have ever had a microphone before. And in that regard, I think you do have to applaud ESPN, whether you think the programming is of the greatest or not. The fact that they are trying to represent the American population in many ways, at least that's how it appears to me, I sincerely applaud.
Look, these conversations are tough, and when someone in my position explores this topic, the responses from industry members are often negative and critical. I've worked in numerous buildings, you have too, and in most cases, sports radio folks are full of passion and opinion, and they can dish out strong takes. But when their own work is called into question, they have a difficult time handling critical feedback. You've been around personalities all across the country as well as programmers. Why do you think that's the case?
Insecurity. That's the number one word to me. I think that there's an aspect of very, very talented people, and you touched on it a moment ago, in order to be good at this, and this is a hard job, going on the air every day. Because, you know, people think on the surface, oh, you're getting to go on the air for 3-4 hours a day and just talk about sports. And on the surface, that's accurate, and it sounds really fun and really simple. But when you're on the air that many hours a day, as you know, inevitably you start to reveal more and more of yourself through natural conversations, through natural occurrences of events, through things that you just generally talk about with your co-host and the people that you work with. And I think over time, you know, that becomes something that you want to protect. And in protecting that, it's natural and normal in many cases that I've seen and my experience has shown to become quite insecure when it comes to criticism. And let's face it, it's also so much easier for people to criticize today with Twitter and with Facebook. And not only is it easier for them to criticize, it's easier for them to criticize anonymously. And it can get incredibly vitriolic and venomous and really, really nasty. And so it's easy to see how insecurity comes to pass, because there's a fine line between thin skin and insecurity, right? And,
yep.
You know, when you get attacked and you're the public personality, you are the person that's in the public eye, you can't go back at that person because you've got everything to lose and nothing to gain. And that person that's being the cowardly critic has absolutely nothing to lose. And what they gain from it is the notoriety of getting under your skin. So, but I think my first word is the most important word to answer, and that is insecurity. And it's our job to help all of the people that do this every day to understand that they are secure, that they have this job for a reason, that we believe in them, and that we think that they can take our radio stations or our networks wherever we need them to be, and that we have their back, that we will support them. And I think that's something important that gets lost a lot, because we're all busy as day-to-day managers and leaders and program directors, and we have a tendency to get into habits of only talking to our talent when we want to correct them on something or tell them that they did something wrong, or not even something wrong, just something that we'd like for them to do a little bit differently. And over time, it starts to feel like, man, I don't even know if this guy or this woman has my back anymore. And again, I think that's a really pivotal, important part of being a leader, is that you have to make sure that you clearly articulate to those on your team that you have their back, and naturally within reason, right? I mean, you have to be able to defend it. And that's usually the speech I give to people is, look, I'm going to support you as long as you're being smart and as long as you give me the chance to defend you. If you do something that's defenseless, that's so stupid that there's no way to defend it, then we're going to have a problem. But if you have good reason and good logic, and maybe something just went wrong or you made a mistake and you're willing to own up to that, then I'm going to support you. And I think that's how you have to face it.
Well, another part that contributes to that sensitivity is the rating system. I mean, you could look like a genius or a fraud depending on what the numbers say each month. I mean, as somebody who has to look at it, not necessarily in one local market, but you've got multiple markets that you're responsible for. You're trying to help the market manager and the PD in all these situations enjoy success. At the same time, you're going to have unique challenges in some of these places. Not every place is going to be your zone KNBR and Ticket, which you're fortunate to have three great brands there to work with. But when you look at the rating system in general, what's your takeaway of what it's doing well and where it needs to get tighter?
By the way, don't forget about, you know, the Animal in Oklahoma City and Jocks in Birmingham. There's really
I'd be listing every one of your brands at that point.
Yeah, I know. And look, they all have their ups and downs. I think the best thing about being in a corporate role is that you can be that guy that says to them, because look, you know, I know from doing, when you're programming one radio station, every shift in the ratings has an impact on you, right? It either creates elation or makes you run for the bottle of Tums, you know? It's like, and what used to just be for PPM markets anyway, what used to be monthly snapshots is now freaking weekly snapshots. So you're going through this indigestion every week. And I think the benefit where I was going with my comment as a corporate person is I'm the guy that can now get on the phone and say, take a chill pill, relax. It's one weekly, it's one monthly, it's 3 or 4 week stretch. Let's look underneath the hood. Let's do our due diligence. Let's make sure the radio station is where we want it to be. And the first thing is, does what's coming out of the speaker sound good? And if we agree on that, then okay, that's the most important thing, because we have to have a belief still in our gut and that what we hear and what we program is something that we're proud of. And then secondarily, we have to say to ourselves, let's wait to see if there's a trend. And that's particularly difficult in diary markets to this day, because you know, it just takes so long to get the information, and the information is frankly so dated by the time you get it. And so, look, I think in both systems, diary and PPM, there are inherent flaws, and we could sit here and talk for 2 hours about those. Sample size right at the top of the list in both situations. But the bottom line is, this is our currency. This is our report card. And you can't sit here and say, wow, Nielsen really got it right when you kick ass and have a great book. And then Nielsen, those stupid bastards messed it all up when you have a bad book, you know. The report card is the report card. And our job is to not overreact, but to be smart about what we're doing. And I try to use ratings like you would use research, right? If your gut is telling you that maybe this show isn't as strong as that show, then are the ratings bearing that out over time? And if they are, then your gut is probably accurate and it's time to make a change. I mean, there's still, and I love this about our business, it's scary, but it's true, there's still a lot of gut that goes into what we're doing. And you got to have the courage to try some things that you believe in, even if everything tells you it's not going to work, and even if the first few trends say that it's not working. If you believe in it and it sounds good in your marketplace, there's a lot of other things that tell you that things work. First and foremost, are the clients getting a response?
Yep.
You and I both know we've had lower rated shows that knock it out of the park when it comes to direct response advertising. And if someone's not getting the greatest ratings, but they can move that needle, that's a valuable person on your team. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all responsible for, is generating revenue and, frankly, elevating the businesses that advertise with us and that partner with us and that have the courage to spend their money on commercials on our radio stations. And when they do that, we want to do them right. So there's a lot of factors. The rating is obviously the most important and the one that we all have to look at and we all have to live by. But, you know, how good are we at converting advertisers? How good are we at being ambassadors for the brand? There's a lot of different ways to have value.
You could also look at, are you getting a lot of response via text? Is your social currency strong? That's one thing that is so much better today than it was 10 years ago. You could see that people are responding to your content. And when you see that, you're more inclined to stick with it because you're right. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I was in San Francisco, I put Buster Posey on for a weekly call. Not hard to figure out. Buster Posey, San Francisco, should be good. Now, the content was not good. But every time he showed up, I knew that we were going to do a 9-share. And I would have a show come back to me and go, this guy is absolute garbage on the air. And I'd say, you're right, he is garbage on the air. And that garbage is getting us a 9. So why don't you figure out how to take your good content the next segment and not be at a 3? Because right now I'm with you. The next segment is way better. But people like the 9 more than they like the 3. And that's the game that you play. You trust your gut. And then you're sitting with your boss going, why are we getting a 3 in the other segment? And where the one that you told me was good is doing it. 3 and the one that sucked is doing a 9, and you're going, you know what, I don't get it.
Well, you make a great point, though. I mean, I think that is an excellent point, because many times in the natural timeline of things, the social reaction is going to be a barometer way before Nielsen, right? I mean, that it's just going to happen more quickly and in real time. And you should pay attention to those things, because if there's any kind of groundswell of reaction, eventually it's going to translate in the ratings. It will show up.
I'd be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on one big change that's taken place in the last few months, because you and I talk from time to time about the business, but we haven't really talked too much about this one. Entercom acquired CBS, so now there's two becoming one. Both are obviously good companies that have done good work, but how do you feel about consolidation, which some in the industry are going to feel could be good for them, some are going to feel could be bad? We may only have 3-4 companies down the road if it continues this way.
Yeah, and I would say, Jason, again, that seems so unbelievable, and the first reaction is, oh my gosh, and then I'm not going to lump you into this. If I was smart enough to research other industries, I bet I would find that this is not at all unusual. Mm-hmm. And I said something earlier that I believe wholeheartedly, and that is that we're not a growth industry anymore. I mean, I've been in radio for more years than I care to admit, and I lived through the times when every year we'd have a 12 to 15% increase in our advertising revenue. Well, now it's anywhere from -2 to +2 if you're doing well. And so I think it's a natural spin-off of a non-growth industry for there to be more consolidation, because it's still a great cash flow business. And if you have the ability to acquire more, especially in a larger market, it's a smart business decision for you and your shareholders. And I applaud, you know, David Field, and I think it's great for the industry because David is a radio operator and he's taking over some amazing brands and properties at CBS. And I, for one, am glad that a radio operator is doing that and not, you know, some foreign conglomerate or Google or Yahoo, and nothing against any of those people, but I like a radio guy running radio stations. Yep. I think that's good for the industry, and I think that's good for the people that work for that company. And I think for Cumulus and iHeart and all the others, it says to us, oh crap, we got to be in our game. They're going to be formidable. That's going to be a hell of a company. We have to get better. We have to be sharper. We have to be smarter. We got to do a better job for our clients. We got to do a better job for our listeners. So in the end, I think it's a natural thing, and you can overreact to it or not. It's just a reality that happens in businesses that are going through what we're going through. And then I think you can look at it and say, it's going to make us all better because we're going to have to compete with that. And they're going to be a really good company when they're merged.
All right, I want to wrap up on this. It's something I do with each guest. It's called Quick Hits. Give me the first thought that pops into your head to each of these questions. One sports radio show in the nation that provides Bruce Gilbert with a rewarding listening experience every time he tunes in is...
Dunham and Miller, the Musers on the Ticket.
The better programmer between yourself and your brother Mike Thomas of The Hub in Boston is...
Not even close. Mike Thomas, by far.
The one thing you're most proud of from your time at ESPN Radio is?
Oh, wow. At ESPN Radio. God, we did some great things there. You know what I'm most proud of? We ran it like a radio station, and a really big and really successful one, and we just had a hell of a team that understood that. That's what I'm proudest of.
And then finally, and I got to hit you with the hardest one last, Bruce Gilbert's biggest career regret is blank.
I've been so lucky, man. I don't have any regrets. I mean, I've fired some people I probably shouldn't have fired, and I feel bad about that. I regret that. But every move I've made, I've learned, I've grown, I've gotten smarter, I think. I guess if I had a regret, it'd be that I probably shouldn't have changed jobs as many times as I did, but I feel like I had solid reasons and I learned from every one of them. I'm a positive person, man. I don't try to look at it that way.
Anyone who tells you about the changing jobs thing, Larry Brown changed a lot of jobs. And as long as he was winning NBA titles, I don't care. If you're not winning titles and you're in crappy situations, then it's different.
Yeah, I agree, man. And here's the other thing, and this is a real smart-ass response, but the other thing I would say is, would you like to see my W-2s? Because, you know, that's the other part of it, right? I mean, you know, Larry Brown didn't change all those jobs because he was making the same money in every one of them. I mean, I think if you look back, he probably was getting a sizable increase every time. And, you know, we are all trying to make it better for ourselves and our families. And that's why I don't have any regrets. I love my job now. I love working for Mary Berner and Mike McVay and Suzanne Grimes and the people at Westwood and Cumulus. It's a great team, and we got a lot of hard work to do, but we're doing it with good people and with good intentions.
Well, and you guys have some killer brands right now doing some great work, so keep it up, my man, and we'll catch up along the way again, I'm sure.
Great talking to you, Jason. Thanks for the time. Really enjoyed it.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bruce Gilbert. He's not only a sharp radio executive doing excellent work for Cumulus, but he's also one of the best people you can work for or with in this entire radio business. I thought his analysis on why KNBR dropped sports updates in San Francisco was right on the money. The discussion about the lack of diverse talent in radio was very interesting. Although some may prefer to bitch and make excuses about the current rating system, he was exactly right when he said this is our report card and everyone's playing under the same rules. And last but not least, I enjoyed his response on why sports media people struggle with handling criticism, with insecurity being the number one cause. I can hold conversations like that all day, but as much fun as they are for me, I recognize you do have other things to do besides spending all day listening to Barrett Sports Media podcasts. But if you want to do that, by all means, there's 8 episodes for you to enjoy now, so have at it. On that note, that's going to put a bow on this week's episode. My thanks once again to Bruce Gilbert for checking in. If you haven't done so yet, be sure to visit the website, sportsradiopd.com. I've wanted to profile the 30 different Major League Baseball broadcast teams for quite some time, And with the help of 30 industry friends and associates, I was finally able to do it. The airwaves will be dominated by these voices over the next 6 months, and I think it's always informative to gain perspective on what makes these broadcasters great, unique, and important to a brand's success. So I encourage you to check them out when you have some time. There's three different parts. They're all listed in the Barrett blog section. In the words of Kid Rock, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.